Chapter 44. The Armistice, a Fraud. Let us pray to God our sovereign will now have courage to die on the battlefront, declared Count Augustus von Eulenburg, one of the Kaiser's closest aides. The all-powerful Kaiser, however, who had been the god of war for years, was melting like butter during the last days of the war. He knew it was the end, and he had decided to retire to a comfortable life of exile at the castle of Abramunge. He would not see a German uniform until 22 years later, when the Waffen-SS spearheaded the conquest of Holland. The German army, despite its courage and discipline, was slowly losing ground. But it was not the Allies who were responsible. The German army was undermined behind its own lines at home. Since 1917, Marxist agitators and agents had, under Lenin's direction, conducted a relentless campaign of subversion and sabotage. The new Soviet embassy in Berlin was the center of communist subversion in Germany. Some of Lenin's agents had been arrested and found in possession of documents and money provided by the embassy. Considerable funds were remitted to the Jewish managers of communist insurrection, Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg. More than 70% of communist leaders in Russia were Jews, and practically all the communist bosses who would appear across Europe in the following weeks would also be Jews. While the German army fought with patriotic fervor, alien subversives were tearing their homeland apart. They took control of Germany's greatest seaports, sabotaged German warships, and spread terror among the population. Officers were murdered and arsenals blown up in Kiel and Lübeck. The terror reached Bremen, Wilhelmshaven, Altona, and Hamburg. Marxist thugs were organized into iron brigades and sent by the trainloads to all strategic points of Germany, where munitions and arms were seized. They took control of railway stations, bridges, and road intersections. Berlin was now falling prey to Bolshevik mayhem, where rival Marxist gangs would fight it out for the privilege of destroying Germany. Soon Berlin was at the mercy of ruthless People's Commissars, and so was the rest of Germany. It was against this background of Marxist terror that German politicians decided to negotiate the end of the war. A frightened envoy called Erzberger was sent to Foch to receive a document demanding Germany's unconditional surrender and to be signed forthwith. Erzberger had difficulty in contacting Chancellor von Baden because the People's Commissars in Berlin had fired him from his job. The head of the German government had been stripped of all power when Erzberger was summoned to sign a document written in French. After much waiting, Erzberger received a telegram from Berlin: "The German government accepts the armistice conditions presented on November 8. The telegram was signed Reichskanzler Schluss. Foch was bewildered by the name, Schluss. Who is this Chancellor Schluss? Who is this gentleman? Neither our high command nor our government has ever heard of him." Foch was glaring at Erzberger with distrust. For a while the German envoy was at a loss for words, because he also had no knowledge of Chancellor Schluss. He might have smiled during a less momentous occasion, but composed himself to defuse a misunderstanding that was turning nasty. "Schluss," he explained, "is not the new chancellor. He is neither a congressman or any kind of politician. Schluss is simply a German word meaning period." In fact, the telegram sent was sent anonymously by someone who dictated the period to signify the end of the message. That was People's Commissar Ebert, who was no chancellor. Berlin was without a chancellor, a secretary of state, and an emperor. A terrorist rabble had occupied government buildings by force in total illegality. Peace had started with a fraud. The telegram agreeing to Allied conditions was in the name of non-existent chancellor and was therefore legally worthless. The Allies were concerned over the situation in Germany. The Marxist revolution could easily spread to Belgium and France. Indeed, Lenin had planned to use Germany as his base for communizing the world. The armistice treaty was drafted to punish Germany to the utmost and quench the Allies' thirst for vengeance, but its immediate result was to save communism and make it into a force strong enough to threaten the world. The treaty ordered the Germans to withdraw immediately from the Baltic states, Ukraine, and Crimea. the German presence had kept the communist virus bottled up in Petrograd. The removal of German troops would open the way for Lenin to invade these countries. Self-interest alone would have dictated that the Allies use the Germans as a bulwark against the Red Tide, but they were so overwhelmed by hatred for Germany they had become blind to the consequences of their action. The armistice was in fact removing practically all of Germany's defense means, 5,000 cannon, 3,000 trench mortars, 25,000 machine guns had to be surrendered. In addition, the Allies confiscated 5,000 locomotives and 150,000 railroad cars, as well as the entire German Air Force and Navy. 3 million German soldiers suffering from exhaustion and years of privation had to make their way home on foot. It was an inhuman ordeal. Meanwhile, gangs of Jewish communists were unleashing a reign of terror in every city of Germany. The bourgeoisie, paralyzed with fear, was hiding in its cellars. Erzberger was still hoping that the Allies would eventually come to their senses by the time of ratifying the peace treaty. He was also encouraged that the armistice had been concluded only after the acceptance by all parties of Wilson's 14 points guaranteeing a just peace. Would this undertaking be respected? European apprehension in the face of the Bolshevik Revolution should have induced wisdom. But it was not to be. Clemenceau was after blood when he stated, "The day of vengeance has arrived. Germany will wait in vain for us to hesitate 1 minute." How did Clemenceau reconcile his statements with his country's acceptance of Wilson's 14 points? There will be no annexations, no reparations, or indemnities of a punitive nature.